What does it take to really excel as a tactical athlete? The tactical field of human performance has exploded over the last few years, and in my opinion, it's been a long time coming. But with that explosion in the tactical field, there comes a lot of so-called professionals and influencers who are going to be selling their performance wares in the forms of programs and apps and, yes, even meal plans. So how does the discerning tactical athlete navigate this field of good and not so good content? What do you really need to look for in order to make sure that you're thriving in the landscape that you work in? So I'm Susan Lopez, tactical dietitian, and this is the Tactical Nutrition and Performance Podcast, where we help tactical athletes bridge the gap between nutrients, metabolism, sleep, stress, and training so that they can perform better and live longer. So today we're going to be talking about how to navigate the field of performance as a non-practitioner, as a tactical athlete. And joining me today is Nate Palin from Any Given Day. Nate is a former Ranger and Special Operations Strength and Conditioning Coach. Nate, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really glad that you gave that intro because mine would never be as clean, and I'd still be trying to say the M word that you said. I'm not even going to try to repeat it.
I'm going to cut that out.
No, I think we keep it. We keep it. And I think we also keep me talking about the fact that maybe it's just because I'm coming on a podcast with a dietitian, but I do have a protein shake in my hand. And I feel like that should be known.
Well, I will tell you that I have a cup of coffee. I have my water with my ORS in it. And I may or may not have been drinking one of these prior to starting the camera, but don't tell anybody.
I'm not going to, I can't read. So I don't even know what you just showed me.
And if you're listening, don't bother going to watch the video. You don't want to see it.
Now they're going to watch the, that was perfect. We set them up. I love it.
Awesome. Well, Nate, I'd love it if you would tell everyone a little bit about yourself, where you come from, what you've been doing.
Yeah. You know, as many intros to myself as I've given, I'm still terrible at them. I purposely omit it from every presentation. My thought is always like, if you're here, hopefully you already know who I am. And if you don't, maybe it'll become irrelevant because I'll just say such great things over the course of this next hour. So not to overpromise and underdeliver, but my history is sort of strange, although it's becoming a little bit more of a common story, right? So started in the military, got out, tried the college game, did fine with school, just didn't love the field that I was in, which was marketing, did a couple internships with some fairly high profile organizations and learned like this is not what I want to do with my life at all. So I went back into the service, spent another 3 or so years as a Ranger. And then while still figuring out what I wanted to do with my life, the only thing I really knew was that I didn't necessarily want to continue the military route because, you know, family, like I could give such props to anyone, my brother included, who is able to, you know, maintain a strong family throughout the military lifestyle. But I knew it was something that I would struggle with. And so I kind of got out trying to rediscover what I wanted to do. And that's when I found personal training. And that was the like, hey, I'm going to do this while I figure out what to do as a grown-up. And unbeknownst to me at the time, like this is a profession, like I can actually do this for a living. And so I learned about strength and conditioning. And then I thought, wow, like they really need this in the special operations community, because we have so many people working so hard, but not necessarily with the best direction. And so I made it my goal to bring that direction back to the special operations community. Funny enough, it worked out well because what is now, I think, unless it's under another name change, the POTF, right? So Preservation of the Force and Family, initiated around that time, around 2010, 2011, depending what unit you're with. And so I worked my way onto that contract somehow as somebody who is way, way underqualified. And I don't give that advice to anyone nowadays, especially because there's honestly so many great quality candidates that it makes it almost impossible for you to get an exception. But at the time I got an exception, I got brought on, you know, really without significant background, but they liked the military background. Came on with a crew in DC of just the most phenomenal coaches on the planet. They are still, in my mind, the most phenomenal coaches on the planet, and I've learned so much from them and continue to. And so it was a great place to spend my first couple years as a strength conditioning coach, and I really accelerated my growth. From there, eventually worked my way to first group, which I know both of us have been at, but neither of us were there at the same time. I've even got the sweatshirt on in honor. And, you know, spent a few years there, segued over to, or went corporate, as I like to say, bought some khakis. So that was fun. I still hate wearing a polo, so I try to avoid that at all costs. But sometimes it is the uniform that is mandated by the NSCA. So I went to the National Strength Conditioning Association, headed up the tactical program there, which actually was awesome because, yeah, it expanded my skill set. And ironically brought me back around to that marketing thing that I was really trying to avoid. But the best thing that it did for me was it expanded my, I hate to even call it network because network sounds like something that you leverage, but really it expanded my relationships. And I started learning and started being humbled by all of the incredible professionals that were out there contributing to the human performance field in support of the warfighter. Because I was in that first group bubble. I knew about the other Thor programs, but I didn't know just like nationally and internationally just how much was out there to support. And this field is exploding in the last couple years, as you mentioned. And so it was kind of the perfect time to be a part of it. From there, I bounced over, I'll keep it real brief on this, to FitOps. It was not a fit. For me personally, professionally, which is unfortunate because they do great work with great people, such as yourself, actually. And my best friend, Hunter Scher, is still there. So totally support what they do. Just for me with the team that existed at the time, wasn't a great fit. So I branched out on my own with Vernon Griffith. We started out the initiative. We kind of split amicably from there, which gave way to what I do now, which is Any Given Day. And Any Given Day is really just education and training in support of the warfighter. So that's a lot longer history than I meant to give, but here we are.
So there's a couple of things, right? One, I really want to hear about kind of the vision behind Any Given Day. But, you know, one of the things I love about you, and I think the first time that I ever came across you, this was like several years ago. I've never told you this, by the way, was during like the, it was like a virtual tactical seminar. And I think you were the only speaker who didn't lead with your credentials. You gave just like a very witty, I can't even remember what it is now. But it just something that stuck with me, right? Because I feel like that's something that people always lead with, which it's important. But I think, you know, you just embody kind of that idea that credentials are great, right? But nobody really gives a shit about your credentials. People care about what you can do for them. And that's kind of something that I feel is accurate as well. And so that's something that really stuck with me. So always so humble. But let's talk about the book, the NSCA book, because you just like totally breezed right over that.
Well, let me go back first because I didn't mention credentials because I don't have any worth mentioning. And I've always said that credentials, I think I said this maybe on Barbell Shrug, but credentials, like you can flash them at the door to like get you inside, right? But then like once you're inside is when your real abilities are exposed. So like just because you get in the club doesn't mean that you've got moves on the dance floor. So I just feel like they're kind of this empty promise, right? And for me, to be honest, like maybe I prefer coming in a different way anyway. So like I'll sneak my way in through the roof and breach that way instead of trying to come in through the front door with some credentials. So that's first and foremost. And then when you say book, do you mean the like Human Kinetics ACFT book?
And I was actually still working in H2F. That book came out. And I think it's just something, again, that exemplifies kind of what we're going to talk about today, about the need for tactical athletes to learn how to become more independent of some of the stuff that's out there, right? More autonomous, I guess you could say.
So funny story on the book is the way that this book came about. I'm sitting in my office at the NSCA, which happens to be adjacent to like this big meeting room. And Human Kinetics is in the house, and the executive director for the NSCA pops in my door. He's like, "Hey, Human Kinetics is here. Do you have any book ideas for him?" And I'm like, you know, it's like 3 p.m. on a Tuesday. And I'm like, you think I just like woke up and scripted down my tactical strength and conditioning book ideas this morning? Like, no, I haven't put any thought. And he's like, "Well, if you want to pitch him on anything." And I was like, "I will come in and I will give them the like tactical performance landscape, and we'll see where that goes." And so I went in and I just talked about POTIF, and I talked about the impending H2F, and I talked about the ACFT coming on as a test of record, and whatever else was going on, you know, lay of the land. And they were really intrigued by the NSCA, or excuse me, the NSCA, by the ACFT, different acronym. And they wanted, you know, they asked some follow-on questions about the ACFT, and I was answering, and they were like, "Do you think that there's a place here, like, for a book?" And I said, "There is, however, right now, who do you make your books for?" You know, and they're like, "Well, mostly like coaches and fitness professionals and yada, yada." I was like, "Okay, this book is not that." I'm like, "The community that you would serve with this book is going to be the soldier or like the lower level leadership that is guiding physical training. And so I don't know that you guys are really equipped to be the people that craft this resource for them." And, you know, apparently by framing it in that way, they're actually only intrigued further. The discussions continued. And next thing I know, they're like, "Hey, let's do this ACFT book." So my conditions were like twofold. One was that I have nothing to do with the actual writing of the book. So I'm like, "Let's outsource this." I gave them a list of like 10 different coaches. I was like, "These are your go-tos. These are the folks who are out there doing it right now. I don't want there to be an appearance of a conflict of interest of like, oh, Nate's at the NSCA. So he went ahead and set up this book deal so that he could like write this book and make a bunch of money. First of all, there's no money to be made in that anyway. Second, the last thing I needed or wanted was to spend time writing a book. And then, you know, the other thing though that I did want to help with was like, hey, let me help select who does write it. And then let me help with how this is like, the visuals and how this is communicated. So back to like, let me help with the marketing. Let me help with the reason I dropped out of college. So it was awesome because I did get to help with that part that I really loved. And then the difficult part was navigating the actual writing, because honestly, and no offense to anybody, because everybody's pressed for time, but you know, the compensation is low and several coaches just determined that it wasn't for them, or they just weren't able to follow through and write. And so Rob Hartman was on board. Talk about if there's one person I know that's reliable, it's Rob. And I decided to come on and augment and help him out. So, and then I think it's important for the audience to know that any of the money that was made by me in that deal was donated to the NSCA to support the NSCA Foundation to support their military CSCS grant. So just to help me kind of feel good about it, avoid conflict of interest. But what's important about the book, which is probably the whole reason you brought it up, is that it's written purposely at like an eighth grade level, and anything that was put in there by Rob or myself that was too sciencey or sort of over the head of the intended audience being the actual big army soldier, was removed from the book. And so it's sort of purposely at the level that it's at. And then one of the things I insisted on was that every exercise, one, has alternatives, and two, that all those alternatives come all the way down to a body weight option, so that there's never any excuse to not execute the program. And in fact, I recently very randomly was linking to the book from my website. And so I found it on Amazon and I was reading reviews. I didn't even know there were reviews for this book. They're mostly positive, which is awesome. And honestly, like, I don't care either way. But one of them like ripped it, and they had a great point, which was like, hey, like day one of this program says you have to do like 10 pull-ups. Like if I could do 10 pull-ups, I wouldn't need this book. And they're absolutely right about that. And I do not disagree. However, comma, that's also why we included alternatives to every exercise all the way down to a bodyweight option. So like there is cable pull downs, there's band pull downs, there's all these other things, there's rows, there's everything else you could do. So we did give guidance for those scenarios. Cause like for us, we're like, they just need to pull something.
I have intentionally pulled up the Amazon page.
Oh no.
I'm not going to read it on air. I'm just.
What's our star rating on there anyway?
You are currently at 4.5 out of 5.
And you I'll take that.
60 ratings. Hey, not too
Holy
shabby.
Cow, there's 60 ratings on this book?
There's 60 ratings on this book.
The things that I will take the most credit for is like if somebody's like, wow, I love that cover image, or the photography is really well done.
Okay.
Hey, I support all of that. For me, the wins were I want to include something on movement competency. So we have a component that talks about that because I think that's absurdly important in the tactical space. And this needs to all be communicated really simply.
And so when you're trying to distill information down so that it's actually usable in the field, I mean, that's typically how you do it. I myself always say, hey, if my fifth grader can't understand it, then do I really even know what I'm talking about, right? And there's a principle behind that. I can't remember what it's called, but it's essentially, do you really know a topic if you can't explain it to a grade schooler?
That's an awesome point. So a few things. One, I reviewed tens, I'll call it. I won't say hundreds, but definitely tens of coaches' curriculum for their personnel, right? So they're like, hey, we're going to do this level one, this level two, this level three. Here's what it's comprised of. And anytime I look at it, I'm like, this is way too much, way too sciencey, way too much jargon. Like, that's great that this is what you're putting in front of them and your intentions are awesome. But when they walk away from this, what are they actually going to retain? And that's what learning is, right? Learning isn't what you told them. Learning is what they're able to walk away with, not only retain, but action. And I think a lot of times we miss the mark. And that's where really the initiative and now any given day comes from, is this reconciliation of idealistic with realistic. And I look at it as I have sensitivity to both camps. Like I understand the ideal and the reasoning for it, and that there should be this sort of like beacon of excellence. And I understand the reality, which is messy and ugly and imperfect, and the reason for it. However, I sort of accept neither, and I feel like they need to do a better job meeting in the middle. So like, yeah, I'll meet a soldier where he's at, but I'm not going to say like, I get it to the point where I'm okay with you unable to train consistently. Like, let's figure this out. Let's navigate this. And then same thing with the practitioner. Like, I understand why your ideals are your ideals, but if you're not able to adjust them and meet the soldier where they're at, then you're just going to be up here by yourself. So like, great, you're on your high horse, but you're also riding alone. And then the other thing I want to say is this reminds me, I spent these last couple of days skiing and my kiddo, 5 years old, was in ski lessons for the entirety of both days, right? And so like I kind of like skied by and stopped by to check it out. And I should never do this because I have such a coaching mind, right? And so I'm watching this instructor over cue the hell out of a 5 year old, like, no, you got to do this. And you got to turn this way and you got to go that. And you got to, and it's like 5, 10 different cues that he's given a 5 year old. And I'm like, he is probably an amazing skier. I'm a garbage skier. I just started skiing at 40 years old. However, he's unable to communicate that down to a kindergartner. And so as a coach or as a teacher, how influential or effective is he really? And I see it all the time with his swim lessons. Sometimes when he has the teacher, who's probably the worst swimmer, she might be the best communicator and gets the most out of him, versus he'll have this awesome swimmer who doesn't know how to dumb it down. And then they're over coaching him and it's a big miss. So I it's extremely important that we understand our audience and communicate accordingly.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's, in my opinion, it's really about, as a coach, at least I see this on my part, I'm not just trying to do my job As far as like, okay, as a dietitian, kind of the expectation is that I just hand out meal plans all day. It's not what I do, right? But my goal is to actually empower the individual I'm working with to distill knowledge upon them, because there's going to come a time, many times, where they're not going to have access to me. They're going to come in contact with situations where they're going to have to make decisions about what they eat, you know, what they're doing on their own. And when you do too much of that over cueing, maybe, as you say, or under coaching and handing out meal plans is a good example. I keep going back to that one. But I'm giving you something to follow, right? I'm writing it for you, but I'm not giving you any information on why you're doing it, how to adapt in an ever-changing environment. I'm not giving you any decision-making knowledge. Now, strength and conditioning is a little bit different, right?
I mean, I agree. And even for, you know, honestly, even with strength and conditioning, I always go back to Jay Merlino, the best quote ever to come from any interview I've ever sat in. And he, like, we are grilling him with all these advanced questions and yada, yada. And he like stops us, like this crew of coaches, we're interviewing him to be our boss. And he's like, guys, it's exercise. It's just exercise. And like, just that little reminder has stuck with me since. And he's so right. Like, is the real issue in the military right now that people aren't doing perfect X's and O's in preparation for the ACFT? Or is the real issue that people aren't doing any or a sufficient amount of X's and O's to prepare for things? And I think everyone has this mindset of like, oh, the operator, oh, the soldier, they're all overtraining. And that's typically not the case at all. Really, it's a lack of consistent dosage. So most aren't training consistently enough. And then if and when they do, maybe they overtrain, but for like a single session. So it's like that too much too soon in an unsustainable way. And then, oh, by the way, they're so sore that they don't do anything for another week. And funny enough, I've got a former Ranger on the warfighter team with any given day who looked at day one of what I had prescribed for him. I hate the word prescribed, but what I had signed him for training. And I was like, and he looked at it and he's like, this isn't enough. This guy, right, has spent years getting deconditioned as he stepped into the civilian world. And so what does he do? He does the training session and he's like, I went ahead and added a whole bunch of burpees and kettlebell swings because those are like two things he knows. And then he's like, I can't get up off the toilet. And it's like, dude, like you cannot make up for the last 3 years in this first day of training, but you can absolutely break yourself and then not be able to train again for the next few weeks, if not longer. And I think that's a lot of what the military, like, if I'm going to help somebody understand anything, the first order of business isn't even going to be like X's and O's. The first order of business is going to be, how do you navigate your lifestyle to insert some degree of consistent physicality? I don't care yet what that physicality is. That's like further down the road. And I think we always gravitate toward like, oh, everyone's overtraining. We just really have to teach them the way. We have to give them the X's and O's so that they can perfect that, so they can do better. It's like, man, I think we're all just so far from that, truth told.
Yeah. And same with nutrition, right? Everybody wants a fancy meal plan. They want to follow a fancy diet. They want exact macros, calories. They want me to give them magic supplements. But at the end of the day, I just want you to eat breakfast. Can you just eat breakfast and it not be 300 milligrams of caffeine and a tornado? Can we just do that? I told someone today actually that, hey, like we just need to start at step one, right? And do the foundational things. And if you are able to do those things, you know, you're going to get a lot further than if I prescribe you a meal plan, right?
Well, and then too, you prescribe them a meal plan and they never execute because it's so far from where they're at. You know, and we've seen that with strength conditioning. Like here's this, I always say there's millions of perfect programs out there collecting a lot of dust because they were just too far of a leap from wherever the operator was. And even at like, even at group, our average guy that trained on the program trained 2 days a week. So this is the person who's actually coming to see us in training, which is already a subset of the total population. And of those who are like dedicated and saw us for training, still on average when they were in-house. So now it's even like smaller percentage trained 2 days a week. And so that's something to keep in mind when we're looking at like the reality of how often people are training and what they're doing. So we're so worried about like the fifth block on day five and like, dude, which core exercise am I going to program? Like, oh my gosh, I'm missing this one thing. And like, we stew over this for hours. And at the end of the day, half of the group aren't even going to touch that.
So let me ask you this. So from your perspective, as somebody who works in the tactical space, if I'm the tactical athlete and I want to really do a good job of managing my training, my exercise, my workouts, what do I need to do to sort of take that self-responsibility and be able to self-manage a little bit if I don't have access to a strength and conditioning coach all the time because of trainings, deployments, or just lack of resources at my unit? What advice would you give to someone who wants that knowledge or who wants to acquire that knowledge?
Yeah, I mean, first order of business to me, and I guess like I'm giving the actual knowledge versus where to get it. First order of business to me is I really have to get them to realize an appreciation for consistency. And that means resetting their mind a little bit away from like this 90-minute physical training session as like the norm. And this is where we kind of set them up for failure right on from basic training, right? Because PT is a big production every day. And the reality in their job is it's not going to be. And so instead, I think we have to give them like a high frequency microdose and show them that like these 90-minute PT sessions, if they were 20 minutes, but they were every day, that would probably do a lot more for you. So already we separate them from this like all or nothing mindset that just runs rampant in the military and especially in the special operations community, right? It's like people are either all on the plan or they're totally off the plan, whether we're talking a meal plan or we're talking about exercise. And so that's like getting them an appreciation for that consistency, micro doses, looking for like movement opportunities. The next thing I would say is I like approaching things from a movement perspective because I think it just gives a really good lens to have further conversations from. And so I think giving them an appreciation for, hey, these are sort of the major movement patterns. I don't really care how you execute them, but try to touch these as often as possible. So that kind of coincides with that microdose. And then from there, I think is when we start to have a volume and intensity conversation. So now we're bringing more context to those movements. But this is where I think instead of going like, hey, let's talk, you know, 3x8 versus 5x5 versus this, that, the other. Instead, I think just getting them to understand that first part of like some things need to be executed with like higher intensity, whether it comes from load or speed. And with that, that inherently means you have to do less of the work. Some things need to be done with lower intensity, but a lot higher volumes. And so just get them to realize that trade-off and touch those extremes to raise the middle. Because I think everybody spends a lot more time in the middle because it feels like work, right? Like 10 by 10, it can be an easy sell in a tactical population, which is mind blowing, but it's because it's like, oh, that feels like work. But instead it's like, hey, if instead of 2 hours twice a week of this ridiculous rep schemes, what if just like every day, 30 minutes, and you just touch some of the extremes. Like today's 30 minutes can be super low intensity and continuous one thing, 30 minutes. The next day, I'm going to touch half of the movement patterns. I'm going to do them with a higher intensity, but I'm not going to do a whole lot of it. Again, I've only got 30 minutes. So I feel like that's kind of the way that I like to approach the conversation is like, first thing, let's get higher frequency of training, even if it's smaller doses. Next, let's make sure you understand and appreciate all the movements because that's going to help with things like injury risk mitigation. It's also going to help it to transfer to some of what you do. And then let's talk volume intensity. And I don't mean like percentages, et cetera. I just mean having that autonomy to self-regulate, also based on like feeling like, wow, I just spent 3 days at the range and I'm smoked, instead of coming in and doing the full 2 hour, you know, Thor session or whatever it is at max intensity. I need to be able to self-regulate and say like, wow, maybe I need to drop this intensity today and just like walk away from today, able to train tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm hearing that consistency and frequency of training throughout the course of a week, right, is going to be more beneficial than if you just smoke yourself and then you're too sore or too crushed to train anymore that week, which is absolutely true. I think a lot of people, they'll do that. They train for an hour and a half, 2 hours, right? And then they can't move the next couple of days. And then they fall off program completely, right? I've definitely seen that. Talking to you program hoppers, I know you're out there. but I think like another thing too is you bring up is, you know, an individual, and I would argue that this maybe happens a little bit more in the operator community, is, you know, they get crushed by their work, right? Having to do the physical aspects of their job and then want to come in and crush themselves at the gym. And definitely there's like a different level of tolerance there, but, you know, getting someone who can operate at that level and thinks that they're fine, how do we get them to see, or, you know, someone who's listening maybe has a tendency to do that. Well, you know, how do we get them to see that maybe that's not the best thing for them? Like, what's the conversation?
I think the key, I think less about what the conversation is and more when it occurs. And so I think with anything education, early and often, and I think this is where we miss in a lot of regards, is like we do nothing to educate someone. So like in basic training, for example, we control all the variables. They're just the doer. They're just the athlete. They're just following what they're told to do. And then they get to their unit. Maybe there's, if you're lucky, there's like an intro, right? And that intro is actually educational to some component. And then, you know, down the road, maybe there's a next thing. But what it typically is like once every 3 years, they're exposed to some sort of education that's like 3 to 5 days of just bombardment. And it's us trying to undo the last 3 years of whatever they've done or learned. And so I think instead, if we get ahead of this, start early and very consistently provide just very, very tiny doses of education so that we actually start to rearrange normal. And that also means that like the current generation, not to say they're too far gone, but we're not going to make as much headway, but we have to think about that next generation and start planting the seed, you know, for the future. Because unfortunately, and you know this as well as I do, operators are stubborn. And if it's worked for them in the past, right? And if it feels like work, then they're going to gravitate toward it. They gravitate toward the extremes. I was no different. Even now, I still have to fight that tendency. Like that tendency has followed me into civilian life, and I'm 14 years removed from the military. So, but what will speak volumes is results. And so even if you can get some small wins along the way, instead of trying to like overhaul their mindset, just get like that little bit, like you were saying, like, gosh, just get them eating protein 4 times a day. Like they're going to start to feel the effects of that. And they're going to start to accumulate these small wins. And they're going to be like, all right, give me more, give me more. Okay, what now? Like, wow, that made a difference, that hydration routine you gave me for that road march. Like I've never felt like that before. I came in 5 minutes faster than I typically do. Now, suddenly, because you're able to get results, you're going to get that recurring business, and they're going to be more willing to listen and make bigger adjustments over time. So I think that's part of it. It's like, don't put up this big wall and try to have like the biggest battle right away. You're not going to win. No matter how much science, no matter how sure you are, no matter how much you're a badass or how many badasses you've trained, it doesn't matter. They need to feel it for themselves. Find that small victory that's going to get them to feel something so that they come back for more advice.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think definitely in several of the units that I've worked in, I think the thing that's worked best for me as the dietitian is not sitting somebody down for an hour and picking apart their entire history. But when I'm out on the training field or on the training floor or in the clinic and I'm visible and I'm just having those micro conversations with somebody, I think that goes a long way with building rapport. And, you know, it's very low threat. Like, we're just talking, like two people talk. But in the midst of that, usually what will happen is someone will be like, oh, you're the dietitian, I got a question for you, right? And so then it becomes an opportunity to deliver that microeducation in a very non-threatening way. And because it's not like an office sit-down type of situation, oftentimes what happens is I get a better result because we have a conversation about it. They're like, okay, I'll try it. I don't, you know, I'm not bought in, but I'm going to try it, you know, and then they come back 2 weeks later. And they're pleasantly surprised in most cases, right? And then that sort of snowballs because then they're talking about it, you know? And so for me, like when you say micro dosing that information, that's kind of what I think of for my lane is, you know, it doesn't always require, you know, I don't need to prove to anybody that I know a lot of science, you know, don't word vomit on people, right?
I think that you bring up a good point, which is I think a lot of times what we create, and this is something that the moment I've gotten away from it, I feel like I've been more successful. And every time I go back to it, I feel like I fail. And that is like, who are we speaking to? Are we trying to serve our own ego? In other words, like, am I creating something that I can defend to my peers, which is going to miss the mark with my actual audience? Or am I actually creating something unapologetically for my audience, and I'm cool with that, and I feel good enough about what I say? And it's really worth bringing this up, because honestly, some of the people who communicate so well to the warfighter, others who are like of an elevated status will even reach out to me and they'll be like, hey, I noticed so-and-so said this. Like, that's the dumbest thing ever. It's so simple, yada, yada. And I'm like, yeah, it's so simple, and it's got 500 likes, and it's probably got 50 shares, and it's great information we wish everyone knew, but the rest of us think we're too good to put that out because it's so basic. So I think the moment that we get over ourselves and worrying about what our peers think, and instead we speak in a way that's going to resonate with who we're intending to influence, that's when we're going to be the most successful. And then the best part I love about what you just said was your sensitivity to the environment and the threat level. Because if you're in their world where they're comfortable and it's a casual conversation, that's very low threat and they're going to be very receptive, versus like we bring them into our classroom and our world and we control all the variables and they're instantly thinking like, wow, I'm good at a lot of things, but this isn't one of them. And now their defenses are going to be up. They're going to be postured. And so it's extremely important for us to put our own egos at risk, right? To like throw the kit on and go out to the range and whatever it is, and like go into their world. And then I also think too, it'll give us a better appreciation for what they do. This is where I see a lot of coaches get really surprised, right? They're like, man, so-and-so can barely squat his own body weight. But then I just went out to the range and like, this guy runs the show. It's like, yeah, it's a different world. Like the whole, how you do one thing's how you do everything, I think is absolute trash. I'm sorry, but like, I think it's bullshit. And this is, I think, one of those scenarios where I've seen it. Like, here's this guy who he's a leader and he's got all the skills and he's doing all the things out in like the Green Beret world, for example. And then in the training facility, he's uncomfortable under a barbell. He doesn't want to take charge of his guys. He's really just in like that athlete and kind of timid mode. And it's like, yeah, these are two totally different environments. He's not the same person in each.
I actually, talking about being vulnerable, I have been laughed off the range before. Oh, and no. I'll tell you the story. I wasn't laughed off the range, right? But you know how operators are. Like, you say something and then they just fucking run with it. And like, there's no going back, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll give you the story. So I was out at the range. I'm not going to say for what training it was or anything like that. But it was an all day range thing. It was really an all week range thing. And I was out there and I was working with some hydration testing equipment, just seeing how it would work out in that environment. And at the same time, just wanting to talk with the guys and see what they were doing. It was hot as fuck. So just making sure that they're staying hydrated, they're eating. And so we got into a conversation, of course, about nutrition. And so I went into, and this was just an informal thing. We were just standing around. They were having their break. And so I went into my little soapbox speech about how you shouldn't come to the range fasted because it actually increases the amount of lead and other heavy metals that you can absorb through your digestive tract. Right? And then just all day long, that's all I heard. Oh, better make sure you eat. You're gonna swallow all that lead. Don't come to the range fasted. Yeah. And they were just like, they would be like 10 feet away from me and be like saying it to each other and making sure that I heard them. And I'm like, okay, well, but how many of them then didn't come back to the range with an empty stomach, right? And so that's the thing. Like when you're getting out in their environment, right? And you're trying to educate them and just build rapport with them and do your job or whatnot. Like you have to be willing to put yourself out there. And I think like there are so many just intelligent, just so good at their job, dietitians that people have never heard of because they're just not public facing, right? But I hear that sometimes too from some of the smartest dietitians I know is they have a really hard time with the communication piece. And I think part of that comes from not having maybe the time, but also sometimes the desire to go, you know, into the field where your athlete is, right? And so, but that's my I got laughed off the range story. But I'd rather spend all day at the range than hold up in my office. So.
Well, and by the way, you nailed it. Like, one, they made fun of you. That's a great sign in this community. We know that. And then two, they'll never forget that message. It went from becoming a joke of the day to probably standard operating procedure in the future. And not only that, one of those guys is going to share it when they're in a leadership role with somebody who's new to the group. And they're going to share it as if it's the gospel. And it's just going to become the norm over time. And, you know, I saw that with like, I remember Rob Hartman, this is a sillier example, but like plyometrics, Rob was always like, I'll try to say, he's like, you got to load to explode. And like in this booming Rob Hartman voice. And like the guys would just make fun of him. But guess what? 2 years after Rob left group, those guys are still saying that same thing. It's helping them execute plyos in the right way. And like, it's not just a sign of endearment. It's a sign of learning taking place and learning that is sustained well beyond the time we leave. So I think it's a huge, huge win.
And just like you predicted, we are coming up on an hour now and we are still going. So I would love to kind of just, and I'm going to put you on the spot here because we didn't talk about this earlier, right? But I want you to take off your strength and conditioning coach hat and I want you to put on your service member operator hat. And I want you to think about if you had to give yourself, there you go, right? If you had to give yourself, you know, two, maybe three actionable takeaways from either the conversation that we've had today, and I know we kind of covered it already, or just something that could help me as the tactical athlete become just more savvy in my training, what would that be?
So the first thing I'll say is never underestimate nor overestimate the importance of physicality. And what I mean by that is this. There are a lot of people out there who are leaving way too much on the table when it comes to physicality, and it's negatively impacting their ability to express their other skills, and it might even negatively impact their personal lives. And when I say other skills, I don't just mean skills of the physical variety. And then the other side of that same coin is there's also a lot of folks out there who are spending way too much time on physical training, not necessarily reaping more benefit, and they would be better off investing more of that time in some of their other skill sets. So again, just to echo that one, it's never underestimate nor overestimate the importance of physicality. And I think that's important, not just for the operator to know, but also for those of us who support those operators. Keep the main thing the main thing. The main thing is not a 500-pound back squat. The main thing is their ability to shoot, move, and communicate, period. Second, I'll echo what I said earlier, which is really just start to build an appreciation for and figure out a strategy to dedicate time to consistent training. And that consistency could be, for example, myself, while the coffee brews 5 minutes in the morning, I'm going to be doing some sort of flow where I touch all the movement patterns. That way the rest of the day goes by and it gets away from me and I don't train. I still did something, and it's something easy, low-hanging fruit that I can touch every day. Then anything on top of that becomes a bonus. And when I do have a little more time and I can put a little more work in, great. And when I don't, it's fine because I still have something I can do, even if I've only got 20 minutes. So I abandon perfect, but I abandon perfect on a regular basis, as opposed to I achieve perfect once a week and then the other 6 days totally fall to the wayside. And then if I had to find a third, the third piece of advice would be to seek out us. There are people out there with incredible knowledge with regard to training, recovery, and everything in between. You don't necessarily realize it until you really open your eyes and expand your view. An example, I'm an Army Ranger squad leader. I think I'm, you know, great at marksmanship. Suddenly Jim Smith comes in, Spartan tactical pistol course, right? I do 5 days in this course with somebody who's truly a professional. Holy hell, is that humbling. I realize, one, I don't know how to shoot. Two, I don't know how to teach others how to shoot, not by comparison to a true professional. And so I think that we need to seek out people who are better than us, put our egos at risk, and learn more so that we can be a better version of ourselves as an operator and a human. And we can help those under our charge also be a better operator and human. So quick recap on those three. This is really just to help me kind of organize them. One, never under nor overestimate the importance of physicality. Two, consistency, consistency, consistency. Find a way to consistently microdose some level of physical activity. I won't even call it training. And then three, seek out experts in all these different fields that you're trying to be the jack of all trades in. Humble yourself so that you can learn, so that you can teach.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, that's like the ultimate reward is when I can mentor or teach somebody and, you know, they can come back and execute it on their own. Or even pass it on to others, and then they just become a promoter of that good information, just like you mentioned earlier. I think that to me is the ultimate reward. Yeah.
I love that. You got to have your champions, and you can't if you don't help them achieve a result. And the most powerful when that achievement comes by way of their own, you know, empowerment and execution.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's a good place to leave it. So before we go, tell everyone where they can find you.
Unfortunately, this band called Any Given Day, which I think is like German metal or something, took all the Any Given Day everythings, right? But instead, I've gone with AGD Ready. So if you are on really any of the socials, it's going to be AGD_Ready. And then website-wise, it is agdready.com. On LinkedIn, you'll want to just follow Nate Palin. The LinkedIn stuff is more just out there to piss off other professionals than anything.
And we'll make sure that we put everything in the show notes if you guys want to click on it. This was a lot of fun. We are definitely going to do it again. I appreciate it. And we'll chat soon.
Likewise. Thank you.